Welcome to this week's episode of the FitCast. This is episode number 146. I'm Kevin Larrabee, and along with me is Lee Peel of LeePeel.com. What's up, Lee?
What up, Kevin?
What up, Lee?
Do you know I've gotten three recent of that? Just want you to know.
Really?
Yeah, Facebook requests. We're like, what up?
What? You said that so loud you muted yourself.
Did I?
Yeah. Yeah, you're kidding.
That's how passionate I am about
it. Well, if anyone says or sends Lee emails, it should always be addressed, what up, Lee? Or what up? That's it. You can do that, too. Oh, I'm so tired. Lee, hey, let's start by asking you that. What's up? What's up at LeePeel.com?
Well, right now, you know, I'm really focused on trying to finish up everything for, like, Body by Eats. So because of that, updates are a little bit slower than normal.
You had a new podcast, though.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm trying to keep the podcast up. It's basically, like, at least every, like, two or three days something goes up. But I was just trying to stay on an everyday note. But, yeah, like, so I got a new podcast up, and it's been a little bit talkative because I talked about the movie Food, Inc., and I talked about, like, some stuff like organics and the kind of issues with that. So it's been a little bit controversial, you know. It's a different take than what's normally out there. My take on it and from all the research I've been doing. But so if you want to read a little bit about that, you can definitely look at more of the comment section of the blog, because me and Mike Howard over at conceptwellness.com had like a nice little conversation and talked back and forth about some things. And then there was a guy that was very angry, and I talked to him too. But yeah, that's about the most that's been going on over there right now. And and we did a track listing, a music track thing. I'm doing like a series about music and training and the research that goes in that. It's really fascinating stuff. There's been a lot of research on music and training and things like that, so I'm going to be talking about that a lot recently too. So check that out.
Lee, I don't want you to give away any of the trade secrets, but where do you find these pictures for your blogs?
Right. I'm a subscriber. It's expensive. I'm a subscriber to GettyImages.com.
Oh, really?
It costs like $1,900 a year.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty good, but with the Google image search for now.
You know, the thing is, though, you can Flickr is actually really, really good. There's a lot of I can't think of the term right now. I want to say fair trade, but that is not the right word.
Creative Commons?
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I'm a nerd.
It's early for me, too. So, yeah, there's a lot of stuff that you can use over at Flickr, and usually it just takes just a simple little message or putting a link. It's very not complicated. So, but, yeah, I need it for other things. Like, I do, like, food pictures and stuff, especially for stuff that's coming over Body by Eats and, you know, just other things. So I need, like, the really professional things, and I need to not be sued, so I just pay, you know. But it's worth it because everyone loves the pictures. I get comments on it all the time. It's like, oh, I love the pictures.
Pretty interesting stuff. Lee, I gotta ask you to turn up your mic one more time. I know why it keeps bouncing up and down. Are you on a Mac?
No, I'm on what I normally am.
No, you gotta turn it up a little bit. I can hear you. It's just, it sounds like,
it's weird because I'm turning up the thing,
but
that's
better.
Is that better? Okay.
Oh, that's great. You know, something I also want to ask you, I know you watch reality TV. I saw this show the other day called Dating in the Dark.
Oh, I've so watched it. It's so awesome.
What do you think?
It's awesome. Okay, because for one, I like it because you know, unlike The Bachelor or The Bachelorette or things like that, like, you don't have to go through like these, you know, months and months of like drawn out dating. It's like just one episode, so like that's cool because my attention span is nil. So yeah, like, you know, the concept for anyone that's listening is you have three people, three guys, three girls. And they basically, you know, they live in this house where they can't see each other, and they meet to date in the dark. And then at the end of the show, They get to choose whether or not they want to be revealed to the other person. And so they get revealed, you know, one gets revealed, the other gets revealed, but they can't see each other, like they can't talk to each other, and they only like see one at a time. And then if they decide if they want to end up dating, then one has to go and they have to like go on the balcony and the other one's like waiting for the come. So then like you're like looking at the door and it's like they can either come through the door on the balcony or they take their luggage, they pack their stuff and they walk out the front door, leaving you standing on the balcony going, oh man, it's horrible. It's awesome though. It's such a great like caption of like human character and things. It's I love it. I can't get enough of it. I'm such a cheese ball for that kind of stuff, but it's just it's awesome.
I knew you'd like it because just that it is kind of interesting how, because in the episode that I did watch, there was like two people that connected really well, but then they saw each other and then they're like
later, like later, I'm out. Peace out. Yeah.
And then you have to see the person that doesn't show up. The other person's just standing there and you're just like, oh, man.
Oh, it's so brutal. It's brutal. And, you know, the funny thing is that most of the time, especially I think for the females towards the men, it's a lot more about style and attitude mm-hmm. of how they come across physically than it is like, you know, just, wow, you're just dog ugly and I just can't deal with that. You know, I think most of the time it's about like a style issue, whereas like the men, I think one of my favorite things was just when they were going through, there's this episode where he was going through like their clothes. And the men were allowed to go through the clothes, and the man holds up like a pair of size 4 jeans, and he's like, "Oh, that's curvy." I'm like, "Size 4's curvy, really? Like that's curvy?" I mean, like I'm kind of a smaller girl, but really, like size 4's curvy. So I think it's a great commentary, like you know, and like the men will like see the girls and like, well, you know, she's a little. It's so nice when they don't want to say fat. She's a little bit of a bigger girl. You think she's fat.
She looks like a fun girl.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Lee, we can't hear you again, but that's all right. You have to turn up your mic once again.
It's up. I think it's just the plug.
Just jiggle the plug, Lee.
I'm jiggling. It's like a bathroom handle. Anything?
No, what did you do before that fixed it?
I jiggled the plug.
Oh,
I
that's... Whoa, there we go. We're okay. Back. All right.
These are the kind of technical difficulties that people complain about.
I know it is. Well,
they're my fault now.
I do my best to level out the podcast. I actually take one extra step when I make the podcast and put it through Levelator, so it evens out for everyone. I hope you all appreciate that. And speaking of leveling everyone out, Tom Venuto is going to be our guest today. We talked about natural bodybuilding. Are we willing a couple minutes? Depending on when we record this,
like some weird flash forward stuff.
Oh, that show looks awesome. That new show looks awesome.
Yeah, it does. I agree.
But yeah, this is kind of our off topic since we're not doing an off topic. But I don't know. One other thing I want to talk about. I'm going to have Anthony Reyna on from Strength and Conditioning Webinars.com and also the Strength Coach Podcast next week. We're going to do a short segment to talk about what they've been doing over there, and I've been checking it out, and it is actually pretty cool. You get to literally watch a seminar on your computer, and you know, it's like watching the PowerPoint presentation with Mike Boyle talking to you mm-hmm. throughout the whole thing. And the best thing is you can watch it over and over again. So it's more or less like getting the DVD of a seminar that you can watch over and over again. And yep. I am pretty jazzed up about this, and I'm really pumped with what they've put together. And we're going to be talking some more about this in the next couple weeks. But so far, like they've had Alan Cosgrove on, they've had Mike Boyle has done a couple of them, Brijesh Patel, Nick Tuminello, who we just had on a couple of weeks ago, Brent Jones, and like they've already put together some guys for the upcoming shows, including Gray Cook and Dos Remedios and Daniel Martinez, like a great lineup. And it's such a cool technology, and it's very cool that you know we have the technology to do this now, because it's literally watching a full screen presentation, and you can watch it over and over again, and you just download mm-hmm. them immediately. It's you,
yep.
like, because I felt like crap when I didn't go to Perform Better, because I, you know, I had to hit my numbers at work or I lose my healthcare. So I have to kind of go to work. I can't get around that. But the great thing about this is, even if you are strapped for the cash and you don't have time to fly somewhere else, you can just check out the presentation. Some of them are the same. Like Mike Boyle did the presentation on understanding sports hernias. Like, that's what he talked about, Perform Better. So it's really cool.
And it's an excellent price. Like, for people that are even thinking, like, come on. The cost of, like, some of these seminars to travel, to stay.
It's $30.
It's a no-brainer. It's an absolute no-brainer.
And I'm not going to call it that one person specifically, but someone, like, on my Facebook said, oh, that's a ripoff. I'm like, are you kidding? $30 for a seminar? Are you nuts? And what they're doing is they're doing two webinars per month. All right? So you get two seminars for $30. You're spending $15 per seminar, or you can do $30 for the year.
You can't even get that anywhere else. And especially, like, even if you could find a local seminar that comes your way, usually the quality of information is, you know, it's a mix. Yeah. It's a mix usually. And usually that mix is bad. So I think that, yeah, it's ridiculous. And I'm not sure, are there credits? Are there continuing education credits for those?
I want to say yes.
Just throwing it out there for anyone who might be a personal trainer and listening. I think there might be.
Yeah,
and I bet if there's not, they're working on it.
Well, what they're doing is they said coming soon, they're going to have CEUs, and they're going to have also forums for discussions from the presenters. So if you do have questions after you watch it, you can throw up a question in there, the forum that's just private for people who are on strength and conditioning webinars, and they can talk to the presenter. The only thing I'm going to ask Anthony about is I want to see if we can get like a thing we can print out, because I like to just take notes on, like, the handouts that you get at a seminar. That would be pretty huge, and it'd make me so happy. let's see. And again, you know, in terms of the price, just one more thing. The person who made that comment wasn't a trainer. They weren't a strength coach. They were just someone that, you know, trains, which is cool. But this is more directed towards people that want to learn more.
Yeah.
So if you're not in the business to learn more, or don't have the desire to, then yeah, it might not be for you. But for all the coaches and trainers out there, and people who are aspiring trainers or in college, this is going to be awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Pumped. All right. yo, Eddie sent, we talked about Eddie last week because he sent us an email about how he jumps from program to program to program, and he never seems to have any kind of rhyme or reason to what he's doing, and he finds a new program and he likes the looks of it, so he starts it. Same thing with diets. So I got an email from Eddie this morning, actually right before we started. He said, I wanted to update you guys about last week's show. I made up my mind and picked a training goal and program. I'm 1 week into it, and I feel good and motivated to continue with it. Thanks for calling me out on the show last week. Kevin, I know how you must have felt getting called out by Alan Cosgrove during that seminar about your training inconsistency. I was shocked when you guys called me out like that at the end of the show, and at the same time, I was instantly motivated to go train and reach my goals. I now know the power of accountability. I did set up a blog, like you suggested, which I will track my progress along the way. Here's the link if you want to check it out, and that's at committedtraining.wordpress.com. Note, I'm still learning how to set up the site, so that's going to be a work in progress. The mental side of dieting and training is such an interesting and important part of the fitness industry, which is why we need more people like Tom Venuto to address it. The goal setting and belief system, reframing information in Tom's book alone made it a valuable resource. Thanks for the support, and keep up the great work. And, you know, that's a great point. Tom's book addressed that heavily.
That's very cool. You're changing lives. Changing lives, Kevin.
Yeah. And to Jonathan Fass, I just want to let Jonathan Fass know he's not going to listen to this, but
he will too.
This is what I need people to do. John has a website. It's called acceleratedstrength.com. And here's the deal, because John's been, like, for some reason, he's been out to point, like, the Yankees winning out to me, even though the Red Sox just crushed the Yankees yesterday. Mm-hmm. So what I would like you to do is I want you to go to jonathanfast.blogspot.com, I would like you to post a comment in the latest post, because there's zero comments already, and he's lonely. And it's the one when he was on Mike Robertson's podcast on May 7th. And I would like you to just post a comment on John's site, making fun of him, or not anything professionally, though. We don't, because this is a professional blog that he
No, updates. we don't condone that in any way, shape, or form.
No, or if you want to make it personal, go on Facebook, and that way you can just search for him on Facebook, and please just destroy him, make fun of him for anything you'd like. Maybe just go, because that's what he does when he's on the show. And I don't. That's it. I think we're gonna take a quick break, and we're gonna be right back with Tom Venuto. Thanks everyone for joining us, and we will talk to you next week.
Good morning, Delaware.
Good morning. Bye, Lee Peel.
Bye, Kevin Laramie.
Hey guys, just a quick heads up that you're going to be hearing the intro for a second time, because we had to redo the intro so Lee and I could talk about some FitCast related stuff. So don't be worried about it, and hope you enjoy the interview with Tom. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the FitCast. This is episode number 146. I'm Kevin Larrabee, and first with me is Lee Peel of LeePeel.com. What's up, Lee?
What up, Kevin?
Hi, Lee, how you been?
I've been good. You?
I'm doing okay. I'm pretty pumped that we have a special guest this week. We got Tom Venuto, who came on for a couple episodes in the past, including, I think, our 100th episode, which was a ton of fun. And you know, from Burn the Fat, Feed the Muscle, and also his burnthefatblog.com. Tom's been all over the place, articles all over the place. He's one of my go-to guys when it comes to fat loss, and we brought him here today to talk about natural bodybuilding, because Tom, like, that's your bread and butter, man. How you been?
Good. Thanks for having me on again, and great to finally speak to you, Lee.
I know, I'm so excited. I'm just a kid in a candy store right now. I'm gonna be like sitting back the whole episode just listening.
Are you gonna be all right, Lee?
I'm a little nervous, like, you know, just a little.
Okay.
I'm off. It's Tom Venuto.
Well, let's get started, because we do have some questions from the audience, and there's definitely some topics that we're going to hit on. But as I mentioned before, mainly for this episode, we're going to just be talking about natural bodybuilding. And, you know, Tom and I have kind of been going back through emails, talking a little bit about this, because, you know, with what I've been doing with Lee, I've been trying to put on a lot of lean mass while trying to stay lean. And you know, sometimes I'll go into the gym and I'll see the guys that, you know, are doing stuff that they don't pick up at the GNC, and, you know, get discouraged from time to time. So hopefully Tom's going to bring some new light to the discussion, and you know, hopefully everyone out there will just get a better idea of how to go about bodybuilding naturally, because there's, you know, there's only so many times you can go to the back of that Flex magazine and pick up a workout to do, or a, you know, a diet plan to do, and have it actually work. All right, so Tom, most people know you as a fat loss expert and a fitness writer, but you have a long background in serious bodybuilding. Why don't you start out by telling us about your bodybuilding background and your philosophy about bodybuilding?
Sure. Well, I started training when I was 14. And I hit the big 4-0 not long ago. You don't need to know my exact age anymore. But I've been training for a long time. It's been over 25 years I've been training. So I trained as a teenager, mainly recreationally, just to look better. And I really took to the lifting and started reading all the muscle magazines. It was really Arnold, like a lot of other people, Arnold and the Muscle and Fitness and the Flex magazine and the Muscle Mag and Iron magazine that really got me started. When I got to college, I slipped a little bit because I discovered beer. And I had gotten in pretty good shape. I was benching 315, and I had gained about, you know, 30 pounds of muscle through high school. But I put on a lot of fat on top of that in college. And I had started out as a business management major. And when my school offered exercise physiology, I switched my major. And I realized I wanted to take a career in fitness. And I said, this is not good. I mean, I'm big and I'm bulky, but there's no abs to be found. So that's when I decided to get ripped for the first time, and with some support from my friends at the gym, they encouraged me to compete. And it never, ever dawned on me to ever take steroids. In a way, I was naive, like a lot of other people when they start reading the muscle mags. I had no idea that virtually all of those pros that I was seeing in the magazines were using drugs. So it just didn't cross my mind. There wasn't a temptation. It wasn't even a thought. So I competed in a natural bodybuilding contest when I was 20, and I took second in my first competition. That was the natural New Jersey. And then my next competition, I did the natural Pennsylvania, and I won my class as a middleweight in the overall. And since then, I competed a total of 28 times. And I'm a lifetime natural bodybuilder. I've never taken any steroids, any banned or illegal substances. And I wouldn't have it any other way.
One of the first ones we got was about Waxy Mays. And, let's just kind of start off by talking a little bit about pre and post workout nutrition when it comes to natural bodybuilding. You know, what in general, what's your take on that, and how do you address that?
Well, for body composition, just like for athletes and for performance, the nutrient timing is definitely important. There's no question about that. But I think that generally most people totally overcomplicate and overthink the subject. And I think a lot of it comes from, you know, the magazines and the supplement company advertising. I suspect, I don't have any figures, but I suspect that the post-workout and now the pre- and during-workout drink market is probably one of the bigger supplement markets. So I'm pretty sure the supplement companies would like everybody to take a pre-, post-, and during- workout drink. But I think it's really a lot more beneficial to break it down and make it more simple. I think when you talk post-workout nutrition, people instantly think of drinks and supplements. And the funny thing is, food doesn't even come across their mind. It's like, okay, what drink should I take? It's as if the drink is mandatory. And I'm not against drinks. I think they can be really helpful. But I think we should just look at post-workout nutrition as it could be food or it could be drinks. And how you set up nutrient timing, it really depends on the person. You got to individualize it just like you individualize everything else in your nutrition. You know, it's based on your goals. Like for endurance training, a lot of the research on post-workout nutrition comes from endurance sports. And that's really a whole different ball game. And, basically the bottom line here is you want to look at fueling your workout and what you eat before. It has a huge role in what's going to happen during your workout, your intensity, and recovery afterwards. So at the simplest level, it's fueling before and recovery afterwards. My clientele hasn't been endurance athletes very much. It's mostly been fat loss and bodybuilding. So it's probably best if we focus mainly on physique, fat loss, and muscle gain. But no matter what your goal, the big picture is that what you eat before you work out is going to affect your training. So I think that pre-workout is really, really important. If you work out first thing in the morning, I know some people train fasted, and with the exception of light or medium intensity cardio, I don't think that's a good idea. I think we want to fuel the workout properly. So first, when you wake up in the morning, even if you don't train, I think that's a good time to get a good meal in, because I'm assuming that you haven't eaten anything for 6 to 8 hours. So your body's in that state where it needs energy, it needs nutrients. So for nutrient timing, I think that's the first meal that you got to think about is your breakfast, right? Mm-hmm. Because what you eat there first thing in the morning is more likely to get partitioned into muscle, less likely to get partitioned into fat. So basically, that's one of the larger meals. Then if you train right after that, that's your pre-workout meal. So what I would usually do is I'm front-loading a larger portion of my calories early in the day. And for me, it's pretty standard bodybuilding fare. It's like oatmeal and fruit and maybe a whey protein stored in my oatmeal, or it's scrambled egg whites. So now so what you do for nutrition then, pre-post workout, all depends on what time of day you train. If you train later in the day, then you're still going to want to get a substantial pre-workout meal. And that, you know, that's the next time to give some thought to nutrition is the post-workout. That's probably the most important meal of the day, or at least one of the most important, because that's where you kickstart the recovery process and the protein synthesis that kickstarts the muscle building process. And with every meal, you want to, just like with every other meal, you want to get a lean protein and a considerable amount of carbs. In fact, it might be your highest carb intake for the day, or at least more than you'd have in a meal that's in a rested state or it's not in your training. And I think a lot of people in fat loss programs especially have a mental block about this, eating a lot of carbs before and after a workout, because they think it's going to stop fat loss. But it really is a purely psychological thing. Those are actually the times that the large serving of carbs are least likely to get stored as fat. And I can give you some numbers. I usually don't go by formulas, but I can give you some numbers. But I do, again, I think most people overcomplicate this. I think it pays to simplify. And the simplest way I know to put this pre and post into perspective with nutrient timing is just what I call a bracketing technique. And it's basically what I just described. I bracket my workout. I'm talking about intense strength training with my two largest meals, largest in terms of calories and largest in terms of carbs. So if I'm in a fat loss program like pre-contest, I don't have as much to work with. So mainly the majority of my daily carbs are going to get wrapped around my weight training. You know, when I diet, I use a cyclical low-carb diet. It's not a ketogenic, very low-carb, but instead it's a high protein with carbs. Usually it's set around a gram per pound of body weight. So for me, that might be only about 180, 190 grams a day. And so the majority of those are going to go either in that first meal of the day or wrapped around my workout. And then the rest of the day, I'm eating mainly lean protein, the healthy fats, and mostly fibrous carbs. So there's not as many starchy carbs. So now if your goal is muscle gaining, then you got a lot more room to work with on your carbs so that the pre and post workout could be even bigger. And then I probably would have room to include some carbs in my other meals as well. If you absolutely have to have a number, usually the protein intake is going to probably be in the 25 to 50 grams range. And the exact amount, that's going to depend on male or female, body size, activity level. And if you absolutely need a formula, probably in the ballpark of about 0.25 grams of protein per pound of body weight for the pre and the post workout meal. And the post might be a little bit bigger. And then on carbs, probably going to be in the range of about 60 to 100 grams pre and post. And again, probably a little bit more for post, although you could adjust it according to the amount of calories you burn and how glycogen depleting it is. And if you need a formula for that, it's probably going to be somewhere around a half a gram per pound of body weight. Could be more for athletes, but I'm thinking physique here. So the amount, it depends on whether you're in a deficit or surplus, fat loss, or muscle gaining. There's a lot of factors. And if you think about it, you know, if I'm taking 175 grams of carbs on a strict contest diet for the whole day, I don't have all that many to spend. So the more you're in a calorie deficit, the stricter your diet, the more carefully you have to allocate those. So that's the big picture.
Okay. Well, Tom, do you think that the sport of bodybuilding has gotten a bad rap? I've got a question for Tom, and this is from Nicole. What do you say to all the haters who dismiss bodybuilding as a dysfunctional sport of pure vanity? I'm a 22-year-old female making my way slowly but surely towards the stage as a figure competitor, hopefully for the first time this November. It just seems like a natural progression for me. I love lifting, and I've gotten support and knowledge of regional champion bodybuilders who have conveniently friends with John Berardi. However, I have a really hard time explaining to people what I'm training for. Physique competition, a bodybuilding sort of thing, I usually say. An even more difficult time explaining why. I have come to compare it to running a marathon, the lofty fitness goal for the day, it seems, except that I prefer weightlifting to running ridiculous distances. Sometimes I feel like I'm completely downplaying and disrespecting the sport. However, do you explain to the general public what and the why of bodybuilding and why they should respect it? Best, Nicole.
Well, I would think that figure would probably get even more respect than bodybuilding because it's a more appealing look to the mainstream. I mean, I get a lot of people, I don't know about you guys, but I get a lot of people who will start my program, and when they tell me what they want to look like, they're clipping pictures out of a figure champ in Oxygen magazine. And they're saying, that's what I want to look like as ideal. So I don't really see, at least I haven't seen that much hating towards, especially the direction that the figure sports are going for the women. I think it's a little bit more, the bodybuilding people give a little bit more of a hard time, especially, like you said in the beginning, you know, what do you say to the haters who dismiss bodybuilding? They say it's a dysfunctional sport and it's about vanity and, well, I mean, there's definitely a vanity sport to bodybuilding, but that's what everyone wants, right? To look good naked?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, anyone who says the only reason that they train is just for function, I think they're full of it. I mean, everybody wants to look good, and people want to look good because they want to feel good. when they look good, it's not just looking. It's not just about a look. It's not just vanity. It's about feeling, how you feel about yourself. And you know, I've been involved with some of these transformation contests. One of them just recently, and I saw what it did for people's life. It changes a person's whole life. There's no way it's just vanity. It changes a person's life when they transform themselves. And competition is the path that a lot of people use to transform themselves, because nothing else got them so motivated. Nothing else got them up out of the couch. Everybody needs a goal. And, you know, there really is some of the criticism, you know, about bodybuilding or physique sports is vanity. It's legitimate, you know. And some people say, well, if you train like an athlete, you're going to look like an athlete, so why not train like an athlete? And they say form always follows function. And obviously there's definitely truth to that, but it's not an absolute. I mean, form doesn't always follow function. There's athletes in all kinds of shapes and sizes, and not all of them are ripped and muscular and symmetrical. I think some of the examples that are pulled out from the functional training supporters, like, you know, if you pull out an Olympic sprinter or the best-built MMA athlete as an example of what functional training will do for you, and as part of an argument against bodybuilding, I don't know if that's really a fair example. You know, cherry-picking mm-hmm. the most genetically gifted mm-hmm. athlete who's got a training regimen hours and hours a day and saying, hey, follow the functional training program, you know, and in some cases it's, you know, what is it, 30 minutes, you know, 3 days a week, and say you're going to get a body like these athletes, you know, I think not. So, you know, and I also think there's a big mistake in thinking that physique training is necessarily non-functional. I mean, physique programs are designed, if you're going to compete, it is, you're getting judged on how you look, but that doesn't mean it has to be non-functional. I mean, bodybuilding programs and physique programs can be very, very intelligently designed, cover every movement pattern using mostly free weights, using some of the tougher, more challenging exercises like front squats instead of always being on the leg press, you know. So who says that form and function can't meet in the middle? So, you know, I think we should ignore the haters. I mean, we should, and on one hand, we could, you know, we may be put in a position to defend our sport, but you know, sometimes it's just better to surround yourself with the people who are going to support you without questioning what you're doing in a negative way. I mean, the contest prep, it's tough enough. You're working against your own, you know, your own mind, the doubting voices in your own head at times. It's hard enough that you don't need other people. I think probably just let your body do the talking. Instead of talking about it or defending people who are hating or criticizing, just go do it. Get yourself into awesome shape, and you're going to get positive attention. You'll get respect. People will compliment you. People will approach you in a positive way, and then they're going to be asking you how you did it. And then you got an invitation, and if you want to talk about the all the positives of the sport, you got a captive audience, and maybe you'll inspire those people to compete, because everybody who decides, hey, I want to go to the next progression, I want to go to the next level and compete, it's because they saw somebody else that inspired them. So, you know, there's a positive side, and I think the best way to show it is just to do it.
Tom, there's actually been some debates on forums about whether bodybuilding is even a sport at all. Like, what's your response to people who say it's really not a sport?
I guess it depends on your definition of a sport. I know some people who say poker is a sport.
It's on ESPN like every night, so.
You know, I mean, I would call it a game, but hey, if you want to call it a sport, if you're a poker fan, more power to you. It's just a label. But, you know, depending on your definition, bodybuilding may or may not be a sport. So call it a competition if you prefer, because I don't think anybody's going to argue with that. In fact, in bodybuilding, a lot of times we use that phrase, a bodybuilding competition, more than we do the sport of bodybuilding. I call it a sport because to me it's my sport. You know, I think if something has a physical component and if there's competition, it's a sport.
Yeah.
You know, bodybuilding has that. Some people say, well, that's not a broad enough definition. There has to be skill. There has to be athleticism. Well, who decides what's skill and what's athleticism anyways? You know, the high schools, universities, the Olympic Committee, some all-knowing authority. I mean, who gets to decide? Why don't we just decide for ourselves and call it whatever we want to call it? You know, so I think some people would argue against bodybuilding being a sport because they say the judging is too subjective. And there's a degree of, there's a lot of subjectivity. But in bodybuilding, we have very, very specific criteria. And it's not vague like a lot of people think it is. It's very specific, and a professional judge can see those criteria. And sometimes it's close, but I mean, how is it so different than something like diving or gymnastics?
Exactly.
I mean, there's a panel of judges watching a diver or watching a gymnast do a floor exercise, they don't all give their score. They give an opinion. And you look at the scoreboard and you see the scores aren't all the same. How come they're not all the same if it's cut and dried? So there's subjectivity with that, too. So I think it's a kind of a silly debate. I don't think it's ever going to end. For me, bodybuilding is a competition and it's a sport. And you know, beyond that, I think it's an art. And it's an art in more than one sense of the word, because it's an art. I think the process is an art, and I think the end result is art, too.
I think people take away so much the importance of balance and the actual creation and time that it goes into doing that. And I think that if you've never done it, you know, if you've never dove into it or helped someone do it, that you just really can't respect it for what it is, because it's not as if everything just ends up that way so easily. I think that it definitely has merit to be called a sport. But another question, what is your favorite template for putting on mass, Tom? For example, body part split routines seem to have fallen out of favor. So what are your thoughts on split routines versus full body training or simple two-way splits like push pulls or upper lowers?
Totally depends on the person. Depends on the individual, their goals, their sport, whether they're an athlete or they're just training for physique. It depends on their lifestyle, the time someone's willing to put in the training. And I think a really big one that we don't talk about enough is experience, which is a training age, how many years you've been training. That's the big one. A beginner, intermediate, advanced, or somebody who's really advanced. I've been training 26 years now I've been training. And all those things are going to have a big influence on the program design. But if you start from the beginning, I think it's pretty cut and dried. I mean, for a beginner, you cannot go wrong with a full-body workout. And, you know, in bodybuilding, an old school way to do it is just maybe 6 to 8 exercises, maybe 10 if it's specific for bodybuilding and you're going to hit all the smaller muscles too, like biceps, and one for tris and one for calves. But probably an ideal setup would be 2 different full body workouts, alternate them every other day, like 3 days a week, like Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Stick with the basics, squat, deadlift, or Romanian deadlift, rows, pull-ups, you know, chest presses, shoulder presses, dips, you know, plus some abs, and you just can't go wrong with that template for starting out, for putting on mass. And I think a lot of beginners will open up those muscle magazines and see the pro routines, and they'll jump right into them, and they just have absolutely no relevance to the beginner at all. And it doesn't have to be complex for a beginner either. You just focus on learning the right way to do the basic exercises, learn how to do the squat, learn how to do the deadlift, learn the basics, work hard on them, work on adding weight to the bar every workout. It could be really linear in the beginning. You don't have to complicate it as a beginner with all kinds of fancy techniques and drop sets and supersets and periodization, just the basics. Then once you've put on some muscle and you got maybe, I don't know, at least 6 months, maybe a year under your belt, then definitely move into a two-way split, like a push-pull or upper-lower. And that lets you increase the number of exercises you can do, which I think is beneficial for bodybuilding purposes, because you're going to get more complete development and more balanced development. And that would probably be a 3 or 4 day program. You know, a 4 day program might go Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, or for an extra day of recovery, Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday is one way I like to do it. And you're hitting each muscle group then twice a week with a two-way split. And this here, about the intermediate phase for building muscle mass, you're going to start to need to put more variety in the program. You're going to start to change the rep ranges. So instead of just doing like 3 sets of 10 or 3 sets of 8 to 12, now you go into heavier and lighter days. Personally, I really like the undulating pattern where within each week the rep range change, or even a concurrent concurrent periodization where you got heavy and some lighter rep ranges at every single workout. And I really like those methods for bodybuilding. As opposed to, like, if you're doing 5 sets of 5, or if you're only allowed a rep range of 4 to 6 reps and you stay on that for an entire block of training, I prefer to get multiple rep ranges. I can't speak for bodybuilders or specific sports, because I don't know that kind of training as well as bodybuilding, but it gets my vote to change the rep ranges and keep doing that into the advanced phase. And after you get through a period of get through the basics in the beginning and get through a good solid 2 day split, anybody who wants to move up to the competitive level of bodybuilding, that's where the split routines come in, and that's where they're still perfectly valid. Even though they have, you mentioned they've fallen out of popularity, they've fallen out of popularity in some places that they should fall out of popularity. Like a lot of athletes were using bodybuilding routines because they just didn't know better, whereas they should have been training more specific to their sport. But bodybuilding is a very specific and specialized sport too, and it's got a specific needs, and that's what split routines are for. So, I mean, I've been training for 25 years. The way I do it is I split up on a 4-day split. I like, for advanced bodybuilding, I like either a 3-day split or a 4-day split. A 3-day split might be something like chest and back, then arms and shoulders on day 2, and then legs would be day 3. And if you hit that 2 days on, 1 day off, now you're hitting each muscle group once every 5 days. And that allows you to do more volume, and because you're doing more volume, the workouts are more spaced out because you're literally breaking down muscle fiber, and that is what the bodybuilders are aiming to do, to put on mass. And then the way I currently train is I go four-day split, and I go 2 on, 1 off. So I'm currently, at this point, I'm hitting each muscle group once every 6 days. And I've stuck to that for quite a few years because it's working really well. So, I mean, I think that one of the bigger factors is your training experience, and the second big factor is what your goals are. So what's the best way to gain mass? It depends, but that's the basic template and the basic progression, how someone would move from beginner through advanced.
Tom, I got a question for you. It's kind of going off the path a little bit, but, you know, as I mentioned before, like we've kind of talked about this in the past, and I've written about it a couple of times, and I've seemed to, from our audience, I've gotten a lot of backlash from it, and just me talking about using, you know, steroids or performance enhancing drugs as, you know, when I step into the gym, you know, even though I'm just a trainer, I'm just a coach, and I'm going in there to again, just get stronger and, you know, for those reasons to look good naked, whatever it may be. But when I get onto that field, me personally, I feel like people are cheating on the field, and it's, I don't know how to really ask this question, but you know, like how do you feel when you walk into the gym and you see guys doing, you know, half or even a quarter of the amount of work that you're doing and have just much less dedication than you have, but they're taking some kind of they're taking steroids so they can get those results unnaturally. Like how do you feel about that, and you know, how do you address that even with some of your clients?
Well, like I said earlier, I was really naive for a long time and I didn't know what was going on. And then there was this kind of instant awakening. I don't know what triggered it, but it was like one day I suddenly realized, oh my God, they're all on drugs. And in I don't know what the penetration of drug use is in other sports, but I can tell you that at the professional bodybuilding level, it's, if it's not 100%, it's about 99%. So one day I just realized that, and then I started to realize, I remained naive, because then I realized that the bodybuilders, competitive advanced bodybuilders, were taking drugs, but I didn't realize how many other people were taking them. So I kind of remained naive for many years, and meanwhile, all the people in the gym are taking drugs around me. And then when I realized that, I was kind of upset about it too when I first realized it. But today, it just doesn't bother me at all because it doesn't feel right. It does feel like cheating. And you know, this discussion could go in a lot of different directions. There's a lot of people who, especially online, will defend drug use, and they'll talk about the fact that there's hypocrisy on both sides. You know, the people that are they're for or against, but I'm natural because to me, it just totally feels artificial. It feels fake. It doesn't feel like I did it. Like it wasn't my achievement. And you know, like I said earlier, people do this to get a feeling. All of us, even I do, even people who compete, because you want to feel a certain way. I don't like the way it feels to just the thought of what it would be like to take drugs.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it was just never, for me, it was never a temptation, and it was never even a serious thought. And after I got over it in the beginning, it stopped bothering me. It didn't bother me at all. I don't worry about other people. I just want to be the best that I can. The problem is when, there's the way the world is, and the way the people want the world to be, and the way the world is today is that steroids are illegal and steroids are banned. So you can make all the moral arguments you want, but the fact is, the way the world It's illegal. So if you take them from the black market, you're breaking the law. And if you take them in a competition where it's banned, you're cheating. So now you're breaking the law, you're cheating. And then there's one more consequence that is even more negative, in my opinion, is because of this stigma that you're cheating and you're breaking the law, taking steroids turns people into liars.
I like that. I like that answer.
Hey, Tom and the FitCast. I finally got Burn the Fat, Feed the Muscle, and I'm already loving it. As a former trainer and continuing exercise physiology, wow, and nutrition knowledge hound, I was wondering if you could recommend any good resources for me to check out, books, journals, databases, etc., besides PubMed. Okay, so Allison does not like PubMed. Anything other than that?
I use PubMed for most of my research, actually.
I know, too.
You know, also, I actually use Google. There is Google Scholar, which is scholar.google.com. And if you know the exact title of the study, if you put it right into the regular Google search engine, too, you can usually come up with both the PubMed abstract citation and the homepage of the actual journal where you can find the full text. And a lot of the older studies you can get the full text on. The new ones you have to be a subscriber or buy them individually. I also subscribe to several journals on paper, and then I get the rest of what I need online from PubMed and journal websites. My biggest focus is natural bodybuilding and also fat loss. So the journals that I get is, first and foremost, I get all the obesity journals, and I get the strength and conditioning journals. There's three major journals that I like to read for weight loss info. International Journal of Obesity is one, and that's put out by Nature Publishing Group. And then Obesity Research, that's also put out by Nature. And then the one put out by IASO, International Association for Study of Obesity. That one, what is that one called? Help me out. Obesity. It was Obesity Research and International Journal of Obesity. They all sound the same. But three different journals.
Like,
and then I'm a member of ACSM and NSCA, so I get their journals. I read the Medicine and Science, Sports and Exercise. NSCA has two journals, which is pretty good for strength and conditioning info. And I look at American Journal of Clinical Nutrition quite a bit. One thing that's pretty helpful, and you can get that at the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition site, AJCN.org, is you can set up alerts. So if you got a topic that you want to research, just learn how to use the alerts function, and then you can create parameters to search for certain subjects, and then they'll just email you whatever's new, and that's probably the best way to stay up to date.
Tom, when are we going to see you on stage again?
Good question. I've been asking myself that question for the last few years. You know, I used to compete a lot more in my 20s. I competed almost every year, and usually it was twice a year because I was in shape, so I'd like to hit a couple shows. And then I only competed a few times in my 30s. I can't believe it's been since 2005 since I competed. But I do have to squelch the rumors that I have retired. Totally not true. I'm definitely going to compete again. And I have not picked the show or the show date yet, so I can't give you an exact date, but it looks like it's going to be this fall, October, late October or early November. What I'm going to do is, the last time I competed in 05, I have a blog that not many people know about. I actually have two blogs because most people know about my Burn the Fat blog, which is burnthefatblog.com. But I have a bodybuilding blog. It's called bodybuildingsecrets.com, and I'm horrible at updating it. I don't update it that often. But the last time I competed, I journaled my whole training, the whole 3 months leading up to the show. So I'm giving some serious thought to doing that again, because that's really, really good motivation and accountability. A little bit of public accountability will keep me to it. And if I announce that I'm going to put my pictures up from the show and track my progress, that'll keep me motivated. So that's bodybuildingsecrets.com. So if you want to keep up to date on what I got going on, and specifically in bodybuilding, not weight loss stuff, but serious competitive bodybuilding, that's the site to visit.
Very cool. We'll make sure to throw a link to that in the show notes. And finally, like, what have you been working on? Do you have any upcoming projects? What should our listeners keep a lookout for?
I thought you'd never ask. Yeah, I'm always keeping pretty busy. Well, the Inner Circle, burnthefatinnercircle.com, has always kept me busy since we opened that back in 2006. And it's a kind of a combination between it's a members-only community. It's a community and a support site for people who want to lose weight and get leaner and build muscle too, but mainly focused on fat loss. So it's a support site where it's really a huge community. I mean, we have thousands of members that support each other, and people post their progress photos and post their journals and get help directly from me and from my staff, but also from other people that are training. So it's a support site, but it's also like an information knowledge base. So I mean, my goal is to build one of the largest science-based knowledge-based sites that has absolutely no commercial agenda to it. So there's nothing for sale from that site. It's just a membership, and it's just information, and every article, every piece of advice is research based, and including the citations, and that's really been growing. So that's keeping me busy on an ongoing basis. The new news is Burn the Fat is Feed the Muscle is the ebook that I released originally way back in 2002 as a book, and then as an ebook in 2003. So it's been around for a long time. And that means it's been overdue for an update for a long time. So I've been spending a good part of this year working on updating, revising, and fine-tuning Burn the Fat. And we're going to re-release that in the fall as well. And that's also going to be probably around October or November. And then the other big project is for 2010, we're working on a Burn the Fat coaching program. And coaching was really my main business for years. I started off as a personal trainer. But then I found that it was limiting, you know, with the number of people that I could work with. So I started offering coaching programs through telephone, and then later on when the internet came out, long distance. And it's been a while since I've offered that. So we're revamping the Burn the Fat coaching program, and you'll be able to look for that in January, and get news about that on the Burn the Fat blog, .com.
Very cool. And Tom, any last words for the aspiring natural bodybuilders out there in our audience?
Yeah, don't listen to the haters.
Great advice. Great advice. Well, Tom, thanks again for taking some time and talking with us on the FitCast. And again, whenever we can, I want to get you back on the show to talk some more.
Cool. Anytime, Kevin. Thanks both of you.
Thanks, Tom.